All right. So, Anna, thank you for coming over and recording and being my guest today.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. And I didn't tell you about this earlier, but the last two episodes that I recorded, just to like get back in the groove, I had to do what my writing mentor had advised me to like get through, like a writing block.
Yeah.
And that was lower your standards.
That's great advice.
Yeah. And so part of my lowering standards for those first two was like I usually have tea with my guests. I had to drop that just to like help get started. But the advice worked.
That's
and
awesome.
So we're here and we have tea in front of us. You had asked for something that was non-caffeinated. So we have some barley tea. It's a little bit on the old side, but tea doesn't go bad. Or as long as it's not moldy, it's not bad. It just gets kind of weaker over time. If you can store it well in like an airtight container, it'll like keep its freshness for a lot longer. If it's just sitting out in the open, it'll like lose a lot of its flavor and potency. But this barley tea is a little bit on the old side, so
I like it so far.
Good. How would you I know describing food is like something I like struggle with. How would you describe it?
Hold on, I'll take a sip.
Yeah. I'm gonna take a sip too.
I mean you used the word earthy before when you were showing me the different teas, and I think that fits. It definitely it feels grainy. I know barley is like a grain anyway, but yeah. Like that, I don't know, we brewed beer for a while at my house. It kind of reminds me of that like malt flavor.
Yeah.
Or smell. Like our house used to smell like this when we would make beer.
Yeah.
So it feels very comforting.
Yeah. I don't know how I don't know formal it is, but like I oftentimes add half and half or cream to my tea, and honey or sugar if I feel like it. So you also added a little bit of honey and half and half to our drinks. And I really enjoy drinking barley tea this way. Yeah.
I didn't know you could make tea out of barley. I suppose you can make tea out of a lot of things, but.
Yeah, I showed you the like chrysanthemum flower tea that I have. One that I want to try is, I haven't had in a while, and I'm like, you can like basically make it by yourself. If you have like orange peels and then you let it dry out without getting moldy.
That sounds well worth the effort.
Yeah. And then you can like make a nice tea out of it. And it's got that fresh, like orangey citrusy smell to it.
Sounds very refreshing.
Yeah. I want to try making it maybe during the summer. Yeah, and Anna, I've known you for a while now, and how do you like introduce yourself normally to people?
Yeah, so I am a mental health therapist, and I am also a creative. So I like to balance my life pretty evenly with helping and then also creating, whatever that might look like. So I like to write, I like to do digital art, I like to make candles, and I don't know, just do different projects. I like to see what I can do.
Yeah. I didn't know you were like made candles and wrote.
Yeah. I am writing a story about my D&D character right now. It's based on our D&D campaign. And then it's sort of deviated because I'm learning more about story structure and just, I don't know, writing is a lot more formulaic than I expected it to be, especially like fiction writing. So it's deviating a bit, but it's really fun. So
I like pre-pandemic did a lot more writing and was like a lot more involved in like the Twin Cities writing circles.
Yeah, you mentioned you had like a writing mentor or something. I didn't know you wrote either.
Yeah. And like crafting a good story with like story beats is like really challenging.
It's tricky. What do you write?
I haven't written in a while, but when I did write more actively, it was like short stories and like some poetry. And when I was like really trying to be like active as a writer, I would oftentimes do this activity where I go to like some random movie generator sites, like pick some movie that looked kind of interesting. I'd like read the Wikipedia plot summary just to like get the gist of it.
Nice.
And then I'd set like a timer for like 20 minutes or 30 minutes and try to write like my own story, like loosely based on it, maybe ish, depending on what I felt like, and try to like it wasn't so much like writing like polished sentence, mm-hmm. but like how can I like get some semblance of a plot, like a mm-hmm. beginning, middle, end type of thing.
I feel like setting a timer is a great writing exercise, yeah. especially if you're a perfectionist, because like slam it out, like you can't waste your time trying to create the perfect sentence and then the perfect sentence and then you like delete
such
it.
It's such a detriment.
It's so bad.
Yeah. I was really lucky when I was younger. I didn't realize how lucky I was. When I was a freshman in college, my creative writing professor was a writer named Marlon James. And
I feel like I recognize that name.
Yeah. One of his books, like he started teaching it at McAllister like after one or two of his novels had been published, like maybe two or three, something like that. Like,
does relatively he do sci-fi?
He does like fantasy type things.
I feel like I heard like, him on
not
NPR.
Not like just like straight fantasy, like...
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Nice.
But like not like D&D fantasy. Mm-hmm. But so like he started working at McAllister at like... one or two pretty relatively early on in his like novel writing career, and then like during his time at McAllister he like a couple of his books just like blew up, and he became like super well known in the like the literature world. I think the first book was I can't remember the name, but it was like a story about like Bob Marley and like a bunch of maybe like a fictional account of Bob Marley's I think death. The name is escaping me right now. And then after that he wrote a couple of like fantasy stories that were like based in African mythology. Yeah, so that might be kind of
I am 90% sure I listened to his interview on NPR driving back from Duluth.
Oh, and he's like,
year.
He's such a smart person.
He's so cool.
He's so cool.
I can't believe you know him.
We're Facebook friends.
Oh my
somehow.
Gosh, that's so cool.
Still.
That's really cool.
And he's like the coolest person I've ever met. He's so funny and so like quick-witted. And he's like, in terms of like social justice stuff, he's also just like brilliant. Just one of the coolest people I've ever met. And like my freshman self, like did not realize how lucky I was to meet him. And he has like just these amazing gems for like with teaching writing. Like he probably had the know-how to be like a master's level like professor. Just absolutely wasted on us like freshman first year students. but he told us that like if you write a sentence that you absolutely love, like you need to get rid of it.
Oh my gosh.
Because like you will contort like anything and everything possible to like keep that sentence.
So true.
And so if you just get rid of it, like you'll let the character speak, you'll let the plot like unfold as necessary. And if you don't do that, like you might be like writing around this perfect sentence
that doesn't
perfect
work
yeah, so
that's really good advice.
Yeah, kill your babies, don't write perfect sentences.
I feel bad just deleting my really good sentences, or worse, like a whole chapter that I really love that just doesn't fit. Or it's not working, so I put it in, I think I have like a graveyard folder in my writing program, so I can go back and look at it, but I never have. It's just nice to know that it's there.
Yeah, it's like putting it in the graveyard so you don't feel like you have to write around it, but it's not lost.
Yeah.
And then whatever you're writing, if it ever becomes big, like you can dig it up and be like, oh, like here's some extra materials.
And everyone's going to be like, this sucks.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, that's why it's in the graveyard.
It's a deleted scene for a reason.
Yeah. I'm releasing this as a favor, not because I think it's good. Yeah. So how far along in this story you are?
Oh, not far at all. I'm trying to figure out how to write. So I'm probably like, I think I'm maybe 7,000 words in. How much of that is usable is questionable. I'm trying to write multiple perspectives and realizing that's like a really hard place to start writing when you haven't written anything before. It's really ambitious. And so I haven't really picked it up in a while because mechanically, I guess I'm not quite sure what to do with it. I'm worried about like putting work into something that I'm not going to use, but I'm coming to terms with the fact that I think that's just part of the creative process is making a lot of stuff that you don't use.
It's incredibly inefficient.
I hate it. As a perfectionist, I wish like I could just spit it out and it would be golden.
Yeah, the act of writing and is like, like an act of like rejecting capitalism because so much of what you write is to help you get to what you're actually trying to write.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the mentor David Mura who taught me lower your standards. He also taught me that. What was it we were talking about?
Creating a lot of stuff.
Writing is like is like searching for language that you're like trying to find or discover.
I like that.
Yeah, so it makes sense that we have to go through multiple drafts of things and go through lots of junk to get to what we're actually trying to say.
Yeah, definitely. I've heard someone describe the first draft as a discovery draft, and then after that, I don't know.
Yeah.
You fix it up from there.
Yeah.
But you're not supposed to worry about the first one.
Yeah, I've tried to participate in National Novel Writing Month.
Yep.
And it's like so hard to just like truly turn the filter off and like pound out sentences and lines.
What is your process? Like, do you plot out the whole thing beforehand or do you kind of do it intuitively and then add things later to make it work? Or
yeah. I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way to do it. I think the most right way is to like have progress, whatever that looks like for you. And I think some people just like start writing and start pounding it out. And then like, I think Neil Gaiman does a more like, just like write a first draft and then like go back and try to figure out what your plot is and clean it up and tidy it up. I personally like to kind of draft it out first, at least plot wise. And sometimes like the plot you draft out is like not actually what you wind up writing about anyway, and that's okay too. Yeah, so I tend to want to know just like big picture what like the overarching problem, what the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about you? Do you have, or are you just kind of still?
I'm still figuring it out, I think.
It's a messy process. And you just
it
have to,
is. I know. I was like, I think I'm someone who could maybe plot out everything. And then once I have a word count, I can just, like, maybe it'll be easier to work on it in small chunks like that. But yeah. I think what I'm finding is I like having kind of a loose idea of what I'm going to write about. And then when I actually start writing, I realize, oh, my character would never say this. Like, or like, why would they respond this way to this character? That doesn't make sense. So, I don't know. It's kind of a really fluid process. I'm kind of going back and forth between my outline.
It kind of has to be, because like, as you learn your characters more and you figure out the plot more and you figure out your world more, like all of it informs each other. And it goes back to writing being an incredibly inefficient process.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fun though. Like that's, I don't know. That's why I want to do it is maybe, and into like, I want to say that I wrote a book. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, but it's really fun.
Yeah. As a former, like good student, you know, got good grades and stuff. Yeah. Former gifted kid.
It's my trivia like, group name.
That like that perfectionism, like writing absolutely forces you to like figure it out or like not stop writing.
Yep. Yeah. I heard someone talk about like perfectionism and creativity once about, let's see, like writer's block or creativity block as more of, how do I describe this? Like, creativity is more like a pipe that you like put things through as opposed to like something that you just kind of gather out of from everywhere. Like you have to keep things in the pipe moving in order to get to some of the good stuff. But you have to put out some bad stuff.
Oh, 100%. You can't release banger after banger. Yeah. Yeah, I think that was when I was younger. I wish I found that out younger before I was like in my 20s.
Yeah.
Because like when you're young, it's just like inspiration just hits you. And then when it doesn't hit you, you're just like, well, I guess I'm not going to write today.
I guess I'm not a writer.
Yeah. And they don't really teach your creativity. Like you're supposed to just like do well in school and mm-hmm. like get to the right answer. And like writing and a lot of creative processes are so much experimentation.
Yep.
Yeah. 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 I'm being nosy.
Yeah, please be nosy.
I want to know, like, in terms of your, like, 7,000 is like, maybe, like, not much. I think, like, typical novels are, like, several thousand words or something.
Yeah, I'm going for a fantasy novel. And, like, the standard for that is usually between, like, 90,000 and 100,000 for a first draft, at least if you're trying to traditionally publish and query and stuff like that. So that's kind of my word count goal. But yeah, I'm like kind of just around the inciting incident. And it's kind of just tricky because I have three different characters. So I'm trying to figure out how to hit different plot points with different characters. And I want everyone to have like a full character arc. Mm. But it's turning out, I think it's going to have to be a lot longer, which is not ideal, or I'm going to have to drop some characters.
Yeah.
So I'll probably end up dropping some characters.
Yeah. Yeah. You should try lowering your standards.
Yeah, I should. I want that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like, lower your standards. And it's just to me.
If you're feeling overwhelmed, you should lower your standards. But if you're not feeling overwhelmed, you still feel game. I strongly encourage you to do it. Just because
that's good advice.
Yeah, because if you're game for it, there's no reason to stop doing game for it. In terms of like world building, are you kind of like borrowing from more just like traditional fantasy? Or are you putting any of your own twists on it?
A little bit of both. So my husband actually created this world that we play in our D&D campaign. So it's kind of, it's very steampunk, but in a fantasy setting. So there's kind of this theme of the rise of technology and what we gain from that and also what we lose from that.
Hmm.
And the there's also this kind of subplot about, I don't know, this feels very like American Gods to me, but like when all of this new technology came out, like people, like the clerics and the druids started like losing their connections to their gods, whatever they conceived that to be. And so part of the plot is figuring out how is all of this actually being powered and can all of this live together at the same time?
Yeah.
I have a lot of like kind of themes that I want to explore, but again, I have to lower my standards a bit.
You don't have to.
No, I think I do. It feels too big.
You're either going to create like a banger work or like
it's gonna be
create this like the most convoluted.
It's gonna be like a DeviantArt, like I don't know, never mind. Were you on DeviantArt in the early 2000s?
I wasn't on DeviantArt, but like I don't know, I feel like nerds recognize nerds.
Yeah. It's definitely, it has the vibe right now of like maybe not quite this, but I feel like a middle schooler when I'm writing. I think because that's the last time I wrote was maybe when I was trying to do that. So at least creative writing. So, but yeah, I'm really excited about it. I like my characters a lot. One in particular is an older woman in her 60s who decided later in life to pursue a career in like the city guard. Like her granddaughter was a part of it. So she like did a bunch of strength training and like learned sword practice in her 60s and now is on the guard. And I just really like that. I'm reading Priory of the Orange Tree right now, and it's the first time that I've seen like an older character be one of the main characters. I think I just read a lot of kind of YA fantasy. So I found that really interesting and fun to have a protagonist who's like already done all this stuff maybe, or like figured themselves out.
Well, now that I'll speak for myself, now that I'm in my 30s, like the amount of power these YA protagonists have is like startling. It's startling and absurd.
Yeah. The first time I read Harry Potter after like becoming an adult and working with middle schoolers, I had such a different perspective on Harry Potter. I was like, why are they running around this school?
Yeah,
they should be at home, like reading books.
Harry Potter has the status of an influencer in the wizarding world and could have easily abused it into a political power and just like done horrible things. But Harry's a pretty good, decent guy overall.
I think so.
He's decent. Yeah. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
Okay. So the world is like partly created by your husband, and you mentioned like the inciting, or sorry, before we get to like, or I guess related to the inciting incident, are you with like writing plots and stuff, there's like different formulas, for lack of a better word. Some people will do like beginning, middle, end, and they keep it very simple, or some people even do, I think, just like two parts, like an act one and an act two. And then there's like, you know, all these really complicated, like the hero's journey and all of these things. And are you like following a particular formula? Or
I am, actually.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called.
Sure.
But it was created by someone who used to write for, I think, Star Trek RPG tabletops.
Oh, yeah.
So you start with the ending and then you go to the beginning and you kind of go back and forth until you make your way to the midpoint. So that's how I plotted it out. So I started with the ending and then juxtaposed it with the beginning and then went to the climax and then back and forth and back and forth.
How's that going for you? Is that...
Well, I'm not very far. So, but I think that's because I can't actually get myself to write. Like, I think about it a lot, but I can't let go of my perfectionism. But it is kind of a fun way to write.
Yeah. Supposedly, Dave Chappelle writes jokes by starting with the punchline and then writing the rest of the joke from there. I can't tell if he's just like fucking with us. I think he's just fucking with us.
That's gotta be so. I don't know. A joke is funny because of the context.
Yeah. I think Dave Chappelle's fucking with us. He's just so gifted.
Yeah, he's really good.
He's gotta be fucking with just the new comics.
Yeah. So your short stories, what are those about?
My short stories have been, what's the writerly phrase for it? It's like, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it's like semi-inspired from things in real life. And I also take like artistic and creative liberties with it. So one of the short stories I remember writing is, I had this coworker who is just like a really weird guy. And I don't mean weird in like a negative way, just like
eccentric.
He was a little eccentric.
Okay.
Yeah. A little eccentric. Like one time I one time I stood up to stretch and I saw him just like leaning back like on his desk chair and like just like super not working. And he had on his screen like just like pictures of bears.
I love that.
Like just like bears in like nature, not like bears in silly hats or anything, just like bears like in nature.
Like a slideshow or like a Google image search?
It was like a Google image search. And like, you know, I've Googled, you know, obscure things and random things at work, but it was just so like weird and funny. Yeah. And he was like, I don't know, a little bit into the outdoors. There was one time he's just like one of those people who just drops like the most random lore on you and you're like, what the hell?
Oh, my favorite kind of person. Yeah.
like he's just like, he strikes you as like a very like normal person, like very like subdued, and he's like physically he's like on the more slender side. He's not like super large or intimidating, and then he'll like just drop off like, oh yeah, when I was in the Marines, and you're like, oh,
excuse me.
Yeah, it was just like this like very interesting fellow. And I wrote like this kind of short story, like about him and I guess my interactions with him. Yeah, it was yeah, it wasn't like one of those, it wasn't super exciting because it was very like my observations of him and being a total creeper of him.
Just admiring him.
Yeah. Like studying a bear from afar. Yeah. Haven't written much, but maybe I'll get back into
it. Man, we should be writing partners. I was like thinking about it. I was like, I don't know anyone who writes. And then this just happened. This is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's fun to, like the craft of writing is really interesting, and talking about it, I think, is really fun too. And for myself as a, like my growth as a writer and artist, like being okay with sucking was like such a huge and important step.
Such a hill to climb.
it took so long to get over the hill. It was like the most stressful thing ever. And I worked so hard to get over that hill. Like I would talk about it like in therapy, like I had this, like things from my childhood that made it like really stressful. So it was like very like effortful and like intentional thing to get over. And like learning that, hey, like when people give you like feedback or critiques, like they're not trying to tear you down. Like it's,
they're trying to make your work.
They're trying to build you up. Yeah. They're trying to build your work up. And even if it's like, you know, if they do dislike it, or like people who give good critique and feedback, like they're being very careful and mindful to not tear you down and make sure that you're not like a good person who's giving good feedback. Like the last thing that they want is for you to walk away and like give up on this. Mm-hmm. Right.
Seems like a really delicate balance to be an editor or something. Yeah. Like that.
And I think it depends, like as I've gotten further along, it's been easier and easier to just like be impersonal about it. Mm-hmm. But when I was younger, it was like, no, like this is so precious and important to me.
And I created this.
I created this. It's delicate. I'm delicate.
I feel that in my soul.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard. I think, especially being like a former good student and maybe having a lot of things come naturally, or there is a formula sort of to doing well in school.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And then to go into this really amorphous world of creativity. Yeah. And I don't know, your job is to like not have an answer that everyone else has. Yeah. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put a lot of pressure on myself to like say something unique and profound, and I just need to get away from that.
Yeah, it's yeah, this is something that came up in the last podcast I recorded, but I remember very like intentionally eating heaps of humble pie. And like humble pie is very, very important meal for you.
It's nutritious. It doesn't taste great though.
It doesn't taste good. And then, but it's really important. And if you eat enough humble pie, it stops tasting horrible and awful. Mm-hmm. And it just becomes a little,
you get used to it.
Yeah, you get used to it. It doesn't hurt. Excuse me. I'm going to have to definitely edit that out.
No worries.
Yeah, letting go of perfectionism, letting go of allowing yourself to suck. Was it, Adventure Time? Do you remember that
story? Yeah.
Yeah, Jake the dog, he's like, yeah, the first part of being good at something is being bad at it, or something, whatever, however the phrase is. And I was like, that's going to be an important writing lesson for me.
Yeah, for sure. It's a very good lesson for everything, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember, like, somebody pointed out that, when they're learning to walk, they're not, like, embarrassed to fall over, you know? Like, so at some point we learn that we're supposed to be embarrassed, or that maybe we just are embarrassed about certain things. And it's like, no, like, we should remember what it was like, well, maybe not remember what it was like learning how to walk, but, like, mm-hmm. have that willingness to try and maybe fall over a little bit. There's also, like, ways that we can try to experiment and not fall hard, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, instead of writing a big, huge thing and then having editors reject it, can we write a bunch of small things and have, you know, get feedback on those things that then it doesn't hurt as much because it's not a huge thing.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. Seems like you've been working on this a long time. I didn't know you wrote so much.
That's cool. I was like pretty deep in the community. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I was like in the what's it called? The bell chart curve.
Or yeah. Whatever.
I was like, had progressed past a lot of like probably beginner writers. And like the next probably big hurdle was just like getting more things done and like start knocking on the door of getting things published.
Dang.
But I say that, but like not that I was close to it, but like just
that was the trajectory that was, you were on.
Like conditionally, if I put like years into working, that would have been like the next hurdle. And so I was like in between, like I got to the point where I could like recognize a lot of like beginner writers just kind of like the way that they were talking. Mm-hmm. Not because I was like, oh, like I'm naturally so much better, but because I was like,
you just learned.
Like 3 years ago, I was right there.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was not like, like I'm better than you. It was like, oh, in 3 years, you're going to be like exactly where I am.
Yeah. And you don't look down on those people.
No,
100% which I think
is
like a really good lesson for beginners.
Yeah.
Is like people who are better than you generally just have a lot of empathy for where you're
at. Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, so it was like interesting being like, hey, I can start to recognize like who's new and who's like, even if they're like, I don't know them personally, but like the way they kind of talk about writing and the way they interact with their writing or other people's writing, I could see that they're like more experienced or less experienced. And it was also just like, because the Twin Cities is like a large enough like a big small city in that like you it's not that hard to hobnob with some of the more renowned writers and writers who are further along in their career.
Mm-hmm.
Middle-ish leaning towards the beginner side of things.
Yeah.
And it was a really interesting and rewarding experience. I really enjoyed that time.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So how long has it been? Like, are you still active, or how long has it been since you've been active?
I have, like, when the pandemic hit, I, like, ceased a lot of activities. So it's been probably, like, three, maybe four, probably, like, more than 4 years now. And, like, you know, post-pandemic, you're like, how do you recognize me?
I still exist.
Yeah. do I go over a hug like we used to? Do I go over a handshake?
Oh, no.
I haven't met a lot of these people like in person for a while, so I'm not exactly sure. I haven't like had a weird, awkward reintroduction situation yet, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Selfishly, like, I want you to get back into it. Like, I want to see you do it.
Yeah.
It seems like, I don't know, you seem happy when you talk about it.
Yeah, it's fun, and I like sharing things about it, and yeah, like I like being able to like help people grow and like develop. And there was a time where I was writing, like had organized like a writing collective called Asian American Literary Collective, and it was like really centered on like Asian writers, and we started it with, you know, some other friends, and it was a lot of work. We had these really grand ambitions.
But it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it was really hard. And it was a lot of work, and like looking back, I think like being a little, maybe a little more united on the same, like what we were working for, probably would have been a little beneficial. I think I was like, even from then, I was very interested in like helping other writers grow and cultivate them and develop their talents and develop their voices. Yeah, and it like continues to be something that is like fun and important to do. Mm-hmm. And watch people as they grow. But it's hard because like writing is such a time consuming effort.
Yeah.
That, like it like it's super easy to fall off. And like work, no writer ever says like, oh, like I love going to work, you know, yeah. Like, to pay the bills. That always gets in the way of writing,
yeah.
And everything. So it's definitely like an uphill battle in like many, many ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not something that's easy to just pick up.
Yeah, it's, you have to be intentional about like making time to write and write those like crappy things so you get to the things that you want to polish up. There's a children's book writer named Janet Yellen, and she talks about like you need butt in chair time. Like,
I love that.
Yeah, like just, you need to just sit down and like find time to write.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the other things that you were, like one of the other ways that your like creativity showed was, you had mentioned that you, for 3 months, you were trying to become a YouTuber.
Yeah. I kind of go through these cycles where I just try new hobbies.
No, that's great.
But I made a YouTube channel where I built houses on The Sims 4. And, it was, we mentioned this before we started recording, or you did, like, you could buy the best stuff to record things, yeah. But you just need to start. And I was kind of in that position. So I was like recording on my like, okay, webcam, sure. And like my headphone,
yeah.
Like mic. And it was atrocious. And I got like a step up mic and learned how to use Audacity and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of work. For not a lot of attention. And I think I realized I'm not like, I don't have enough to say, or I'm not like exuberant enough to talk for a really long time at once and just kind of like talk about what I'm doing. I really like the building part. I yeah. will still post on Instagram sometimes, but I ended up trying to do something that like didn't exist on like The Sims YouTube content
yeah.
world yet, which was I found old blueprints for Victorian houses from like the 1800s, and I was recreating them in The Sims, which was really fun. But yeah, it took probably like, I was spending maybe like 16 hours on a video, and then I would get like 100, maybe 200 views, and it was like, the people who were commenting were like really excited and that was fun. But I think, it just didn't, I kind of lost interest when I wasn't immediately seeing results. But I did have
You didn't get an immediate A on this?
No, I know. Well, and I think like my perception was skewed because I had a YouTube channel when YouTube first came out. When I was in middle school, I made anime music videos. And my most popular video to date, I think has maybe like 500,000 views or 600,000 views. And it's super cringy. I'll show it to you afterward. But that like, I was just a middle school kid, like doing this with all of my free time and just putting stuff out people were following me and like looking at it. And I didn't have to think about like, what does my thumbnail look like? Like, is this engaging?
Like early YouTube.
It just happened. Thing, so, it's very different than it was 15 years ago.
Yeah. YouTube is like, when are you doing the Sims thing?
That was last year, I think. So like maybe last summer.
Okay. So like definitely in the era of like quote unquote modern YouTube and like thumbnails and the algorithm boosting you or whatever. And okay. I really like the idea that you of that channel of like having Victorian blueprints and then recreating them. Like it could very much see like a channel like that being successful.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
I like the idea. How do you like come up with the idea?
Let's see. It's something I always kind of wanted to try out. And then I didn't know how much work it would be, but as I was looking at what's out there already, and I was looking at the kind of videos I like to watch, I didn't want to just kind of copy and paste those. I did at first, and it was fine, but it wasn't quite, it wasn't new or anything. I felt like in order to stand out amongst like really well-established creators, I needed to find something to do. And I have this whole Pinterest board of like old blueprints. So I was like, I could try this. But there's like a whole online archive of all these old blueprints, like hundreds and hundreds of pages. So it was really fun to actually just kind of flip through and see what was made and the weird language that was used. I highlighted that in some of my videos.
In the blueprints themselves?
Yeah. There were some things that were like, I don't really know what this is, but I'm going to put like a couch in here or something. Yeah. So, it was really fun. I tried to do like gameplay videos for a while. There's like a challenge you can do called Rags to Riches where you start with no money and there's like all these rules and stuff. But I don't think I'm quite exuberant enough to do like streaming like that, even if it was kind of chopped up. But
yeah. Okay. So in terms of like footage, what can I ask what you were using for the footage?
Yeah, so I have a gaming computer, so the graphics card is pretty beefy. And then I would just screen record, and it took up all my memory.
Oh, really?
You're
recording like the entire time you're building the house.
And then with OBS is the program. I think
I'm familiar with OBS as
well. Okay. Yeah, you can have two different video inputs. So I had like my webcam going at like one angle, and then I had my screen on there too. So it was recording simultaneously. But it was all in one piece. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It was like one video.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna be honest, like the part of me that like is creative and like wants to just like talk shop about stuff, like wants to like workshop this idea. But I feel like it's like fairly
it's in the graveyard file. I appreciate your enthusiasm, though. Makes me feel validated doing it.
No, I'm not in like that Sims 4. That's not my YouTube rabbit hole. That's not what my algorithm feeds me. But I do consume a lot of YouTube content. And yeah, I think it's really interesting trying to like move from being a consumer of YouTube to trying to like create these things, and not just like be a copycat, because like no creative really wants to be called a copycat or anything,
especially when you're putting so much work into it.
Yeah,
imagine that would just
yeah. But it's funny because there are some clearly like shameless people who will just like completely copy and paste what other people are doing. and the fact that they're being called like, you know, copycats or derivative does not faze them at all.
Yeah.
I'm really curious. The last thing I want to ask about like the YouTube thing is, like, did you make like thumbnails and stuff?
Yeah.
Like the one person called it like the Mr. Beastification of thumbnails, where it's like your head doing like a shocked face, like, oh my god, type of thing.
I really didn't want to, and my husband was like, you have to, or no one's gonna click on it. So I didn't, nothing's like that wild. It's not on Mr. Beast level, but I did like spend a lot of time doing like weird faces in my webcam and trying to get the right thing I could clip out, and I don't know. Spent a lot of time doing my makeup and then just turning my laptop off and not going anywhere. Like, it was a lot of time and effort.
Yeah. Yeah, I just admit the face thing is just so, it's like such a part of modern YouTube, but I hate seeing those thumbnails.
But it works. That's what I hate about it.
It's like, for me, it's like borderline turns me off on videos. And I have to like try to read the headline or whatever.
Yeah.
So you did wind up doing some.
Yeah, not like, whoa, like zany ones, but definitely
That would not have fit your
vibe. No. The like click on this weird Mr. Beast icon, and then it's just me with lo-fi music in the background, like, hey everyone, welcome back. Like, just super chill. It doesn't match at all.
Yeah. I'm thinking about like the Animal Crossing YouTubers where they sometimes just use like their character's face.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. I think that could have. Sorry, I keep going back to like workshopping you're trying to revive your YouTube channel.
You can
take
over it if you want.
No, I don't have the, I don't like Sim 4 enough to do it.
See, even you don't want to do it.
No. I like the idea of somebody doing it.
Thank you for being excited about it.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was, during the pandemic, you had started, let's call it a pandemic business.
Yeah.
That sounds could be interpreted poorly. You started a business with, your husband and some good friends.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like for you? Or maybe,
exciting.
Maybe a better question. That wasn't a great question for you. How did it start?
Yeah, so during the pandemic, we met our neighbors across the fence, and we decided to kind of pod together, and they were interested in D&D but had never played, and my husband and I love D&D. We spend most of our time talking about it, consuming D&D content, that sort of thing, so we introduced them to it. They really, really loved it. And so their names are Tom and Don. And both are really crafty and in their own different ways. Tom likes to get these huge gadgets and make things. So he made like a quarter of his workshop garage our dungeon room. Oh, nice. So it has like fake stone and LED lights. And I made art of all of our characters, and their portraits are like on canvas on the wall.
Oh, nice.
And with like their own nameplates. And he like got us all weapons that we have hanging up. It's really
intense.
That's so cute. It's really fun. So we all, started making all of this stuff for our own campaigns. I started making candles because one of my clients actually makes a lot of candles for their D&D characters. So it was maybe about this time last year. I was like, hey, so what website do you use for all of that? And they were really excited to tell me. It was at the end of session. I didn't take up too much of their session time. But so I started doing that for our characters and then our settings to have more of an immersive gaming experience. And then we just had too much stuff, but we wanted to keep making it. So yeah. We started our Etsy business called The Nerdy Neighbors. And it's kind of a collection of all the stuff that we like to make. So we didn't expect it to be too much to hop off the way that it did. But around the holidays, I think we were all spending more time filling orders than we were like at our actual jobs. So it was a really, really busy time for a couple months, which was really exciting and also really stressful. So I think it's been interesting to navigate that as friends and then as individuals too, and talk about what we can do next year to prepare and nurture our friendships too.
Yeah.
So it's been ups and downs, mostly ups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of businesses starting out, and like including just like general creatives, like YouTubers, I think when you're starting out, the hardest part is like getting attention and getting people to like we saw for your YouTube channel, like just producing it is one hurdle, and another hurdle is like having people watch it.
Getting people to actually click on it.
Yeah, getting people to click on it, getting people to watch it from beginning to end, or mostly the end. And for businesses, it's like not just getting people to like come into your business, like your storefront or digital or mortar, whatever. But like buying something with money.
Yeah.
Did it just kind of happen? Like Etsy, because Etsy can like recommend things. It's like a storefront and everything. Mm-hmm. And or like Etsy does not have trouble getting traffic in the way that if you just like built your own website, like no one would click on it. You have to do all this like SEO stuff. You had to promote on like social media and all this stuff. Like what happened, or what do you think, to your best of knowledge, what do you think happened?
Yeah. Well, we put a lot of work up front on having branding and taking really good pictures, having consistent thumbnails, because that's what people click on. Like, that's why they click on it. So I think that really helps. And then one of the biggest hurdles at the beginning is getting reviews, because people don't buy things if there's no reviews.
Yeah.
So even just reviews of our shop. So I gave out a lot of free samples for candles. Like, I was making little tea lights of all the candles that I sold and selling them in a pack that I was losing money on, but I was hoping that I would get reviews, which worked. And then my husband, Sean, also sells some digital art files that people can use. And so we started getting some reviews from those sort of things too. And those are a lot cheaper, like a dollar a piece. So it's a lot easier to get someone to buy that than maybe like a $15 candle.
Right.
So I think we did a lot of work up front to try to make it happen. And then once there was some traction there, it's been pretty easy since then. Etsy will do all the advertising for you, and you can choose to advertise your listing for a fee. But they do take a pretty big cut, which is not ideal.
Yeah. Is that something that you spent money on, like having Etsy promote your stuff more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not too much money. They really only, I think it's maybe 25 cents a listing. And then they only take a bigger cut of it if someone buys something from the ad that they put out.
Oh, so it's 25 cents to for them to put in, make an ad for it?
Yeah. So, but like they only take more money from you if like somebody saw it on Instagram or Facebook or Google and then clicked on it and bought it. If someone on Etsy saw it, that's like sponsored post and clicked on it, they don't take extra money.
Oh, so, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, the mechanics are kind of convoluted like that. But
what's their cut of it?
Oh gosh. Just off my head.
It's okay. Not
I just want to make the candles. I don't look at the spreadsheets that much. My husband does that. But I want to say it's maybe like 20% or 30% okay. altogether. Yeah. And then they take extra money if you pay with Etsy payments, like if the customer does. So that's like pretty much all the payments. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah, because the nice thing about working on a team is that you don't have to do everything.
For sure. I don't have to do the boring stuff.
Yeah, people get to pick and choose, like, to some degree, like, what they are good at and
yeah,
what they want to do.
Absolutely.
Like, were there any, like, major disagreements on, like, people signing up for something and, like, not doing it? Or
No, I mean, I think we all have followed through with the things that we said we would do or take accountability for, or responsibility for. I would say the biggest disagreements have been more so around pricing. I think my husband and I tend to underprice our stuff, and then other people want us to sell it at a fair price or like a marketable price. So I think we're all on the same page now as far as things go, but it did take some convincing on my, or I had to be convinced to like raise some of my prices because I think I didn't see the worth in my own stuff. And ultimately I'm glad I did, but yeah, money's a weird thing.
It is super weird. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Cause you think you, part of it is like, you're comparing yourself to like Target and those mm-hmm. large businesses.
Yeah, exactly.
But also if you're, you also do need to be aware of and like believe that and the value that you're able to produce and that they are, you know, spending money on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a interesting position to be in.
Yeah. And it's nice to get those reviews sometimes. Like I've had people say like it is priced high, but it's not overpriced. Like it's, I understand that this is a handmade product and it was worth it.
Yeah.
Like, I really appreciate people who write comments like that because I think, in theory, people know that, but then you go to Target and you see the same thing
yeah,
a lot cheaper.
It's also rough, though, on Etsy because, like, there are people who would just, like, buy stuff from Alibaba and
yeah.
Still try to pass it off as, like, handmade.
We did have an argument about that, actually.
Yeah.
Because one of us wanted to buy a bunch of these really pretty dice from Alibaba and sell them. And they looked better than the dice that we were making. And they were way less expensive and didn't take as much time. And
so you're making like this, like from
like resin mold.
And stuff. And
yeah. And a few of us were really, really against the idea because we were marketing ourselves as like, we're neighbors, we're making this together. We have a whole bio on our page saying that we make all of this stuff. Like, you can't put this on here. And even if you don't say it's handmade in the title, people are going to think it's handmade because of that's the store we are. So I think we did it once and then we didn't do it again. But
yeah,
yeah, it's just, it's really hard to compete with mass production.
Yeah. Yeah. So, by leaning into like the handmade side of things and making that kind of more upfront, people's expectations are also like different mm-hmm. in a sense, like both from the sense of pricing, like, oh, like if they're very clear that it's handmade, like I can't expect to have the same pricing that like a mass produced product would.
For sure.
Yeah. And I think that helps with just like swallowing the price, whatever.
Yeah.
Hopefully like the sticker shop isn't too great, but whatever feelings do come up.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's made me appreciate handmade stuff more. Yeah. Like I've started trying to buy art from actual artists instead of prints, and even if it is more expensive, I think I just am more convinced of the value of that now than I was before. And that's not to say I only buy from individual artists. Like I go to Target and stuff too, but like I do buy more than I did before.
Yeah. What's it like having like disagreements with, like, what you mean, your husband's one of them. So, like, somebody you spend a lot of time with, and like neighbors who you're like physically very close with, and you like, you know, play D&D together. So,
yeah,
like, you know, friendship emotionally, there's like closeness and proximity there.
Definitely. I think we all handle it differently. Me being a therapist in our meetings, I'm like,
that probably helps.
I kind of make it a joke, but I'm like, really serious about it, like, hey, I'm gonna be me and ask if anyone needs anything from each other as friends, like what do we need to nurture our friendship right now, like after maybe a more tense discussion or something. It's been not too bad with my husband and I. We're usually on the same page, and if we disagree, I mean, we have years and years and years of communication skills that we've developed, so we can get through them really easily. But I think, with friends, it's a little bit trickier. So I think it's something that we're growing and learning about. But yeah, I'm learning a lot about different people's communication styles. I think in my separate life, I spend a lot of time with people like you and people who are generally like really used to talking about feelings and thoughts and being open and honest. And I think I'm not quite used to people being uncomfortable by that. Yeah. So I think that's been a little bit tricky to navigate.
Yeah. What's that question that you ask again to after maybe tense?
Like what do you need as a friend right now? Or what do we need to do to nurture our friendship? Or I'll be like, what do you need from me as a friend right now? I've started doing that after I became a therapist, because I think for a lot of people that's confusing to have a friend who's a therapist. because people get really weird with boundaries, I think. Not weird as in like they're doing it wrong, but some people feel like they can really treat me like a therapist and other people don't want to talk to me about anything personal at all because they don't want to be a burden and they don't want me to feel like I'm working. And so I've started trying to name that more explicitly. Like, what do you need from me as a friend right now? And I think that's been really helpful. And people are more used to it now that I've been in the field longer, but especially with new people, I think that they get a little uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, I think it doesn't sound like you started this as a result of like starting a business with your friends and your husband. But I think that's really helpful phrasing. And I think it could be tweaked if you have like a different relationship with, you know, whoever you're having this discussion or like business thing with. Because sometimes it's like, on one side, it's like we're talking about business. This is just like, it's like the numbers and like the facts and like thinking about just like the business as an entity. And, and like, you know, if the other person didn't care, like this wouldn't be an argument. It'd just be like, I think this. Okay, cool. Let's do that.
Yep. You know? For sure.
This is heated and intense. And
like we're investing our own money into this.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is heated and intense and there are stakes like because people care.
Yeah.
And so, like on one side, it's like on one side, this is very intentional and like you're doing this because you want to support the business in the way that you can or the way that you feel is best. And then it also like can suck when somebody disagrees with you.
Yeah.
Or you put all this time and energy into pleading your case and you get overruled.
Yeah.
And so there is still like an emotion and then like a human component to that. Yeah. And I don't think I've shared with you, but like I'm also like interested in just like business and starting.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I haven't gotten super far with that, but.
Can I know your idea? Can I be nosy?
Yeah, I was nosy before, so for sure. So this was something this is my 6 feet under YouTube channel.
Cool.
Or this is my equivalent of that. Years ago, I was like really into sneakers, and I felt that people who are into sneakerheads, they like really get deep into just like the different colorways and like the different styles. And there's like definitely shoes that can be seen as like super tacky looking, mm-hmm. and some shoes that are just like you know, really like cool, and some are like cool and they fade out of style. Some are just like classics, like Air Force. White Air Force ones are always very clean and like fresh, mm-hmm. and then black Air Force ones are like the opposite. They're like not popular. Like at a certain point in your like sneakerhead nerding out, you get to the point where you're like cleaning your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like probably 6 or 7 years ago. And so it was like still, it was, had grown quite a bit, but had not quite reached where we are in 2023. And there was somebody who had started like their own sneaker cleaning product. And they would sell like these kits to do it. And I was, like I had purchased it, but I was like, I like super don't feel like cleaning my shoes because like you have to like get like a tub of water. You're like
it sounds really intense.
Like lathering it up, yeah, it's like a huge pain in the butt. Yeah, and people like will clean their shoes like once a week, up to.
Wow, that's like dedication. Some
of them do it like after everywhere. It's like the level of dedication and like nerdiness and like love of your sneakers and preserving your sneakers it was like quite deep. And yeah, the idea I had was like, well, if I don't feel like doing that, but I still want to keep my sneakers like kind of clean, like what can I do to do that? And I had the idea, there's like these like boot cleaners that you can buy that they go on the ground and you can just kind of like scrape.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah. And so I wanted to try to like repurpose that to like clean sneakers. And like looking back at it now, like it probably would have needed a little more like workshopping because like the dirt and the mud and the dust or whatever, like they're still like on the brush, right? So you don't want to just like get the brushes dirtier and dirtier,
yeah,
and like just wipe those on your shoes, you know? So like the idea definitely needed some workshopping, but that was like
there's a need there.
Yeah, if there was like, because if it got like sorted out, I feel like that would have been like maybe not like a huge hit, but like it definitely would have made
some. There's a demographic for
Yeah.
People like you.
Yeah, the intersection of people who are like intensely into sneakers, enough to like care about cleaning their shoes, but like I don't really
not
feel
enough
like
to do it consistently.
Because like your shoes are like on the ground, like you're walking all over all kinds of stuff. Like even if you're like the guy who sold like the sneaker cleaning kits, he also sold like they're kind of similar to like those like wet wipes,
yeah,
but like with a little like more stiffer material, and so you would have to you had the option to buy those instead, and like it seemed like kind of more wasteful and maybe not as like in depth, but like you could buy those and then like clean your shoes off with the wet wipes for sneakers, mm-hmm. basically. But you still, like, I don't really feel like touching my shoes and like having
been touching everything.
Yeah, and like having it, I don't know, on the table, like where I eat.
Yeah,
it's like that's not appealing to me either.
Or like the tub of water that you see get dirtier and dirtier.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, and you got to put your hands in it, and it's like, like I still, yeah, somebody else can take that idea.
I wish, like, I'm sure this exists, but somebody could just buy an idea like that. Like, you could sell that idea. I don't know.
Yeah.
I wish there was a market for ideas, but people could just take them.
Yeah, it's free. Circling back to earlier in our conversation about, like, creative and being creative and writing, one of the things that also helped me just, like, release that anxiety about like, being creative and, like, doing good things was... it was specifically like letting go of the anxiety of like an idea that I had being like not as good as I thought, or mm-hmm. somebody poking holes in the idea that I had. Was the thing that really helped me get over that was realizing that, like, you can come up with a lot of different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand if you don't feel like you've, like, quite generated, like, a huge number of ideas, that it feels like each idea you have is precious. But if you keep, like, writing, if you keep doing just, like, creative exercises or whatnot, you realize that you do have, like, a lot of ideas mm-hmm. that you can come up with, and that a lot of your ideas, like, even if they're very good, they still need a lot of work to, like,
yeah.
get done. And, like, handing them out left and right, like, doesn't really...
You have to do something.
You still
with
have
it.
To do it, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, sorry. Keep going.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it's surprising how many ideas you can come up with, too, when you're not trying to edit at the same time that you're trying to create. Because I feel like those are two really different processes. And it's like having a foot on the gas pedal and the brake pedal. Like, you're just kind of stuck.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you have a lot of ideas.
Yeah, no, and it's like, once you have a lot of ideas, it becomes easier to, like, not be as attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
And realize that, like, a great idea is also just, like, realizing the vision of a good idea is, like, tons and tons of work still.
Yep.
Like, I love your idea of the you know, YouTube channel duplicating Sims blueprints, but, like, I don't want to do it. when you describe 16 hours per video, I'm like, no, that's not for me.
Too much. Yeah, it reminds me, I'm thinking of, like, someone's grandpa being like, they stole my idea from, like, 20 years ago. It's like, you had this idea, but you didn't do anything with it. So it feels the same with a lot of other things.
Yeah. When that happened to me once. I can't remember what idea I had. But I felt, like, very vindicated afterwards when I was like, I knew that idea was great.
There's something validating about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, the marketplace proved me right. Yeah. Well, we are at about 1 hour, 16-ish minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's still other things I want to talk with you about, but I feel like we're at a good stopping point for
now. Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah. The Nerdy Neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'll plug any other socials that you want to put in there.
I think just the Nerdy Neighbors Instagram, maybe. We don't really post on it, but why not?
Yeah. Is it just the Nerdy Neighbors
on
Instagram?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can send it to you.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Anna.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Good. We're going to have you on again. So I have other questions.
Yes. It's fun.
Yeah. I stopped hitting record. Cool.